Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Samach Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 14 lines from the top of Daf Samach Vov. We open with a quote from the Mishnah. Boishasa ufigama. The Mishnah had mentioned that if the woman is embarrassed or experiences depreciation, which can certainly be understood in the case of her experiencing some type of impact initiated by some malicious human being, payment made is to her. The opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra in the Mishnah was to make a distinction whether it's an external type depreciation, an embarrassment, or something that's not such. We now turn to the topic heading that we have on the side of the Gemara. You'll notice that we have a nosei, which is the topic, and mivneh, a structural note, combined into one note, and a geometric form, a trapezoid, appears. These are she'elois she'esh lish'oil lefi ha'ikoroin shel Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, questions that one should ask according to the ikoron, according to the principle of Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, she'esh matzavim, that there are situations, she'tashlum al-boshes ha'isha shulam le'bayla, that there are boshes payments, embarrassment payments, that are made to the woman's husband, maye hadin im, etc. What will the halacha be if the following? So as we go through the Gemara, you'll see a few of these questions that are raised. The Gemara, we open with a long question. You'll notice on the second line already of this long question, there's a bracketed section. The reason for these brackets is that the question that's raised within them isn't a real question. You'll see the Gemara rejects it as even a question to ask. But following that, you'll have a couple of questions that have to be dealt with. So now the Gemara. Maskif lo Rava bar Rav Honon. Based on Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra's idea that if the woman is embarrassed, the payment goes in part to the husband. So that you can have a situation where A is embarrassed and B is getting the payment, getting part of the payment. So with that in mind, we're going to continue reading straight through because we already introduced that this isn't a serious question, but Ela Me'ata, if that be true, the principle that Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra told us, B'yesh susasei shel chavero, if a person embarrasses someone else's horse, Hachi nami deboi lemitan le boshes, are you going to say that the owner is going to get payment for that? So the Gemara says, what kind of question is that? Vesus bar boshes, is a horse something that lends itself, that's capable of being embarrassed? Obviously not. We're talking about compensation for having caused embarrassment. So you have to cause embarrassment, a horse doesn't experience that. Ela, rather, the question is, Rokak bevigdoi shel chavero. If someone spit on someone else's clothing, Hochi nami deboi lemitan le boshes? Would the offender have to pay for embarrassment? Vechitema hochi nami. And if you say, that's right, you have to pay for spitting on someone else's clothing. So there is a payment to be made, but we see from the following source that that's not true. V'atnan, have we not learned Rokak v'igia boy haroik? Someone spit, and the spit reached the person himself. We'll see the person's flesh himself. Upora rosh isha, someone uncovered a woman's hair. V'hevir talisoi mimenu, or someone threw off someone else's clothing. Chayav litein loy arba mea zuz. There's a 400 zuz payment that must be made. The Omar Rav Popa lo shanu elaboy, and Rav Popa emphasizes that in this the case of the spitting, it's only where the spit hits the person himself. Aval bevigdo poter, but if the spit hits the person's clothing, so he is exempt. So that you see from this question that the boshes payment is made only when the embarrassment is a result of something that's of a direct bodily nature. So much so that if the spit doesn't touch the victim's body, but rather his clothing, that's not sufficient grounds for imposing payment. If that's the case, why should a husband receive payment for his wife experiencing embarrassment? The Gemara answers, Bevigdo les le zilusa. With regard to spit touching one's clothing, that does not result in a person's degradation. Ishto is lay or law zilusa. There is an alternative girsa on the side, an alternative text that reads this is lay, that when one's wife is subjected to embarrassment, that's a degradation to the husband. So as a result of that, the case of one's wife being embarrassed is a greater reason for payment to be made than spit reaching one's own clothing. There's a very deep message that I think that this Gemara is communicating, but we'll leave that for each one of you to decipher. The Gemara asks, again, we have a question. Omar le Ravina le Ravashi, Elo me'ato b'esh ani ben toivim, according to this idea of when there is zilusa, when there's a cheapening of an individual, so that even if it's not the actual individual, but it's someone who's so closely related that the second party also experiences this degradation, imagine the following. Someone embarrasses B'esh Oni Ben Tovim. Expression Oni Ben Tovim, you see from time to time, but it's someone embarrassed a poor man, a poor man of standing. De'is le zilusa lekulu b'nei mishpacha. When that happens, the entire family is offended, is degraded. Hachi nami d'boy lemitan luhu boishes lechol b'nei mishpacha. Are you going to say that everyone of his immediate family is to benefit, receive payment because their family member was embarrassed? And Tosfos elaborates a little bit. Rashi is quite silent on this, but Tosfos adds a little more understanding to this. Under the Gemara text in the widest lines, you can see there's a Tosfos on the sixth of those widest lines. Oni ben toivim d'islei zilusa l'chol b'nei mishpacha. She'aleim l'shoimer min amakim oisai. The family members are there to protect him from those that might hit him. And therefore, they're all in this together, so that if they're there to protect, as Tosfos says, their family member. Aval osher ben toivim, she'ein aleihem lishmor oisei, ein mispaishin olav b'nei mishpacha. A man of wealth, where there isn't so much, we'll say, family responsibility of one to the other. If a man is a man of wealth, he has other means of protecting himself other than reliance upon his immediate family. There, if the question isn't even raised. But here, since they're all in it together, so maybe payment should be made to each one of them? The Gemara answers. Whereas Rav Ashi responds, Hosom Omalei, Rav Ashi says, Hosom Lav Gufayu. There, it's not their bodies. Hacha ishto gufei havoi. Here, one's wife is considered like his own body. Now, you can see here's this concept of ishto kigufo is not just an allegory or a midrashic type concept, but it has actual monetary ramifications, so that one's physical closeness to one's wife. In fact, the Torah, in describing marriage in the very opening parts of the Torah that deal with creation of man and woman, it says Al ken yazov ish es beso v'dovak b'ishto. Just a correction with the posuk citation. Al ken yazov ish es ovu ves imo v'dovak b'ishto v'hoyu lebosar echad. And the man clinging unto his wife, joining together, they're bosar echad, become like one flesh. So you can see that this, as we just said a moment ago, has actual practical ramifications, making the embarrassment, the physical embarrassment that one's wife experienced, like the man's, the husband's own embarrassment. Now we come to a Mishnah that I have to tell you ahead of time is fraught with what will appear to be redundancies. In fact, the next Mishnah, which you'll see at the top of the upper part of Omid Beis, rather close to the top of Omid Beis, has an opening line that would be, in a sense, a direct continuation of this particular Mishnah. There's very little Gemara commentary on this Mishnah. So it's upon us to try to understand the Mishnah as we learn the Mishnah itself, and then we'll approach the understanding of the seeming redundancies through a rather terse piece of Gemara, along with the Tosfos commentary for a more simple approach. The general topic has to do with that which we can actually glance at the side of the Gemara to read our own topic heading. Kama kusvin b'ksuba. How much does one write into the ksuba document? The ksuba document is that document which is a marital financial guarantee for the woman. That if she were to get divorced or become a widow, she would be able to claim the amounts that are written into this document. So we want to know how much will one write in actuality in Poska Lahavi if a decision was made on the part of her family, we'll see later also on the part of her husband, to bring in Kesef Mezuman, cash. Cash that's brought into a marriage, we'll see, is something that the husband will be able to take and profit with. He'll be able to profit with it immediately. So that's one question. How much, and so everyone's probably thinking, well, if you bring in cash, you write in the amount that he brought in. But we're going to see not so. Number two, chafotzim. Sheshomim oisam, call that a shuma. Shomim is losh shuma. Chafotzim are articles that are brought into the marriage that undergo evaluation or assessment. So once again, you're going to ask, well, if it's assessed, so write in the amount. We're going to discover, though, when learning the Mishnah along with Rashi, that the assessment made is an assessment made by members of the family, and family members will tend to inflate the actual value, and there's in fact a certain rate that people inflate. And you ask, why do people do that? Well, it's to create a feeling of greater significance in terms of the couple is getting married and bringing into the marriage all the more wealth. But when it comes to the husband's actual obligations to the wife upon divorce or her becoming a widow, so we're interested in a more accurate amount to be recorded. So now we turn to the Mishnah. Hapoisek mois lechasano. Umeis Chasano, a father-in-law accepts upon himself a certain amount to write, to give over to his son-in-law, but before the marriage takes place, the son-in-law dies. And as a result of the death, the almona is going to be subjected to yibum, assuming that he leaves a brother. So she then falls to yibum. And the yavam comes to the father-in-law and says, you know, you agreed to give such and such amount to my brother, I want that. Amru chachamim, yochol hu sheyoymar, the father can say, L'chicha isi roitze litein, l'cha iefshi litein. I was willing to give the money toward the marriage of my daughter with your brother, but to you, not so. Rashi adds a little more on this. Yochol, we're looking at Rashi, you'll see in the middle of the page. Yochol hu shayoymar, the father can say, O chalotzo yibeim, either release her or marry her. Avol ochiv, the deceased, when it comes to the father, the father has very little option. Once he agreed to give that amount of money, the brother could have said, O yitain, either you pay that which you agreed, O teshev, ad sheyal bin rosho, or she'll just sit. As she'll sit until the hair of her head turns white. In other words, if you don't pay, I'm not taking her in. That approach, though, we see would not be the same with the case of the Yavam. The Yavam is subjected to this other alternative. Either you release her or marry her. We turn back to the Mishnah. Posko lahachnis loy elef dinar. An agreement was made that she will bring into the marriage elef dinar, 1,000 dinar of cash. Who posek kenegdon chamesh esre mona. He will write into the ksuba as if he received 1,500 dinar. That's 15 mona is 1,500 dinar. That's one type of item or thing brought into the marriage, namely cash. In contrast, there is something called shum, and that's case number two. Can I get a shum who posek pochois chomesh? If something is brought into the marriage, an item, an article, as opposed to cash, that is subjected to assessment, shum is assessment, so whatever they assess its value at, he will write in a fifth less, so that if some type of article or vessel is going to be brought into the marriage, and the family that's gathered together at the wedding says, "Oh, that washing machine is worth $1,000," so the husband will write into the ksuba that I received a washing machine worth $800. 800 being a fifth less than 1,000. Before we go any further, let us just point out that when it comes to the cash brought in, he's going to up it, the amount that is written into the ksuba by, when you look at the new number, it's by a third of the amount that was originally brought in. So when the new amount, in other words, you'll take the original amount of cash, split it in half, as we have over here, 1,000 dinar are brought into the marriage, half of 1,000 is 500, and you add that to the actual amount, you get 1,500. So the 1,500 is increased by what was, it represents an increase of a third of this number that's now being recorded. The reason for that is that when one receives cash, as we said before, he can profit with it immediately. As Rashi says, Lefisha Mistakir Bohen, since he's able to profit with it, it has this increased value to the husband, the fact that he's now receiving cash upon the marriage. And we said, this is all in contrast to vessels and articles that she brings in that are subjected to evaluation. There, the husband will write into the ksuba an amount that represents 20% less than that which they had evaluated it at. And the Rashi points out that the reason for this is because those that are participant at the wedding and look at the items that she's bringing to the marriage, the custom was to evaluate them as a sign of honor to the kala at more than the actual value. And it's quite interesting here how psychology is so powerful when the fact that they're talking about it increases the kavod, the respect that the kala will appear with, more respect and increase the affinity of the husband toward her, all at the same time that where there's an awareness that he's going to be recording less than that actual value. Very interesting idea on the psychological level. Another situation, shum b'mona v'shov b'mona. This is an item that's been evaluated, but not by the participants at the wedding, but rather market assessors evaluated the item. In other words, they'd have no purpose in raising the value from the actual market value of the item. So if something was recorded, was evaluated as being worth a mona, and that's its market value, ein loy ella mona. So then the amount recorded as to the value of the item brought in will be exactly that. As the Mishnah goes on, you'll see, if you were to follow Rashi's commentary, you'll notice that these are examples of what we saw in number two. In other words, the idea of reducing something by a fifth. The reduction from the amount that they assess it as, how much is actually to be written in, we said a fifth less. And here we have examples, and that's why we've indicated in our Mark Gemaras, you see, the double underline appears as highlighting these examples. And we also wrote in Dugmoi Shel Din number 2. These are examples to illustrate Din number 2, because Din number 3 was fairly straightforward. Namely, if the market assessors assess it at a particular value, and the example the Mishnah gave was at a mona, that's how much the husband will write into the ksuba, indicating that that's the amount that she brought into the marriage. However, examples of case 2, shum b'mona, if something was evaluated as a 100, how much must the actual item be? He nosenes shloishim ve'echod sela v'dinar. A mona represents, we mentioned 100 dinar, it's also the equivalent of 25 zuz. Let me correct myself, 25 sela. So one mona is 100 dinar. It's the same thing as saying 25 sela. So if there is a situation of husband being told right into the ksuba an item worth 100 dinar. If we look in the Rashi, the second line under the Gemara text, Shum b'mona, he noisenes shloishim ve'echod selav dinar. Shum shehu mekabloi b'mona. She'omrula, they told the chosan, k'soiv mona b'ksuba. V'tachnis loch shum shel mona, you write into the ksuba that you received 100. So the husband will be writing in 100 dinar, which is also the same as 25 selah. And they tell him she'll be bringing into the marriage shum shamana, something that's worth 100. When it comes to the actual time of evaluation, tzorech shiyashumu oisa bevayis shel chatuna shloishim ve'echot selah v'dinah davi mona v'choim shay. So once again, if the family is telling him to write in to the ksuba that you received an article worth 100, when it 100 dinar, which is 25 selah, and he'll write that in, it better be that when it comes, when that item is presented at the wedding festivity, and the family is gathered together and they evaluate it, we'll say their verbal evaluation had better be 31 1/4. That's 31 selah, and a quarter of a selah is a dinar. What is the significance of that number? So if you take 31 1/4 and subtract 20% of that, you will get 25 selah. Another example of the same thing. Another example, uba arba meis. If they tell, her family members tell the chosan, write into the ksuba that you received something worth 400. He nosenes chomesh meos. The item that she brings into the marriage, concerning which she wrote 400, they had better evaluate it at the family wedding festival, and the number that they say verbally should be 500. Once again, if you take a fifth off of 500, a fifth of 500 is 100, that comes out to 400. So that these two examples that we call examples of halacha number two, these Aleph and Beis, these two double underlined examples, are illustrations of what we mean that keneged the shum, in the face of the family evaluation, he will write in an amount equaling a fifth less. So that if they're telling him, if they're instructing him, write in these amounts, when it comes to the verbal assessment at the wedding with all her family gathered together, they had better say amounts that are 25% more than the original sum that he wrote into the ksuba. I say 25% more than the original sum, that is the same as saying that the amount he wrote in is 20% less than the new sum, the evaluation amount that they stated. As you can see, the Mishnah gave us two examples of basically the same thing. That's an example of redundancy. Why do we need two examples? Furthermore, the Mishnah goes on, Ma Shechosen, we're at the top of Omid Beis. By the way, there's another girsa. Instead of reading Ma Shechosen, you see Rashi and Tosfos have the girsa Ukeshechosen Posek. And likewise, when the Choson, he brings things into the marriage, the same principle applies, that things that the choson, the husband, brings into the marriage that is subject to evaluation Hu posek pachos chomesh. When it comes to writing into the ksuba, he'll write in a fifth less than the verbal assessment that had been assigned to it. Now, as the Gemara opens up, it relates first to the first part of the Mishnah, as is standard procedure in Gemaras, that follow the order of the Mishnah in its explanation. So regarding the case of the Yavam, Tanu Rabbanan, Ein Sorach Lomar, it need not be taught, Rishon Talmud Chacham, Visheni Amaretz, where the deceased, the son-in-law, the original son-in-law died, he's the Rishon, he was a Torah scholar, and the second one, an Amaretz, an ignoramus, a reasonable father-in-law would prefer a son-in-law that's a Torah scholar than one who is an Amoretz. So it goes without saying that in a case where the Yavam is an ignoramus, that the father-in-law would be able to say, I was willing to give the dowry, the amounts discussed, to your brother, but to you, no. Elo afilu Rishon Amoretz v'sheni Talmud Chacham. The chiddush here is that even if the deceased was an ignoramus and the Yavam himself is a Torah scholar, Yochol Lomar, the father-in-law can say, L'chicho yisirotze litein, to your brother I was willing to give, L'cho efshi litein, but to you I can't give, I don't want to give. Posko lehachnis loy elef dinar, and v'chule indicates that the continuation of the Mishnah is what we're interested in. The Mishnah spoke in halacha number 2 of Keneged Hashum, when it comes to things that are evaluated, so less is written in. And then the Mishnah went on in the section, the section that we had labeled as examples of number 2, it went on to give us examples of shum b'mona hi nosenes shloshim v'chotzela, etc. The Gemara says hainu resha. Is it not so that the continuation of the Mishnah in effect is simply a reflection of the resha? The Reisha said already that when something's evaluated, so you write, when it comes to the writing into the text of the Ksuba, you write in a fifth less. So hasn't that already been taught? What do I need the continuation of the Mishnah for? And this issue of continuation, it really affects the entire Mishnah. We saw even to the top line over here on our on this Omid, all that is, it's all redundancy. So the Gemara answers, Tana shuma rabba v'katoni shuma zuta, Tana shuma didei v'katoni shuma dida. The Mishnah feels the Mishnah needs to state this halacha with regard to large amounts and small amounts, regarding things she brings into the wedding, large and small, regarding things he brings into the marriage, large and small. We take a look at the Tosfos, who breaks down the Mishnah very methodically. We're looking at the Tosfos, the second Tosfos on the page, Tana Shuma Rabba V'Shuma Zuta. And as far as our Gemara markings presentations, we're going to be learning only the first part of this Tosfos, the first third of the Tosfos. The second part of the Tosfos, you'll see Uluri Nira, maybe you see that we've marked that off with a swivel underline. There he gives a different approach. The Tosfos begins, Tana Shuma Rabba v'Shuma Zuta. Shuma Rabba, Hahu de Keneged Hashum Upoisek. What we have in our Mishnah as section 2, number 2 of the Mishnah, that phrase, Dekoya Elef Dinar, that's a reflection of the, it's a continuation in terms of numbers of example one. And example one, there was 1,000 dinar of cash brought in. Example two has to do with something that's evaluated to the tune of 1,000 dinar. That's a large amount. That's a large assessment. An item that's worth a lot being assessed to that amount. Veshuma zuta, hainu seifa, dikshechoson poisek, the end of the Mishnah that spoke about when the Chosan writes something in, when the Chosan evaluates, that is a reflection of something small. Demashma psika koldhu. The language indicates whatever amount. Ubedida nami tana shuma rabo v'shuma zuta. So as far as the first part of Tosfos, he is telling us that that example number two of the Mishnah and the closing remark of the Mishnah are referring to the chassan bringing things into the marriage. Whether if the chassan brings something that's going to be that's an expensive type item that undergoes assessment, or the chassan brings in something of little cost that is subject to assessment. So structurally, the beginning and end of the issue of Shuma is a reference to the Chosan's items that he's bringing in that will be subject to of assessment. Tosfos goes on, Ubedida nami tana Shuma rabba v'shuma zuta, and in focusing on the girl, the wife, that she brings into the marriage, also zuta, the example of something small, was he noisenes shloishim ve'echad. That was the example that we saw 3 lines from the bottom of Omen Aleph, the first double underlined case of shum b'mona he noisenes shloishim ve'echad selah. Ve'echad. That is a rabo, a shuma rabo, is he nosenes chomesh meis. That was the case at the bottom line of Omen Aleph, where he was told to write in 400. She has to bring in something that will be evaluated at 500. Now, as we said, there are other approaches to how to break down the Mishnah, but for our purposes, this will suffice. As you can see, the Gemara itself doesn't get into the reasons for it. Why is it not sufficient just to make it, just to open up and leave it at that? The rule that things that go that are subject to evaluation, the amount to be written in, it should be a fifth less than the amount that they at which they evaluate things. So we said there are reasons for why each case had to be spelled out, and we alluded to some of these considerations, but very, very briefly, when we saw we made reference to Rashi, how people will inflate the value of things for the purpose of creating a sense of honor. So you could see that consideration, without being told that it's a standard situation, you might have thought that will change depending on who is bringing the item in and how much the item is really worth. That having been said, we understand that there is a uniform rule that applies to all of the cases, as we just saw. The Mishnah, Posko lahachnis loy ksofim. An agreement was made, an understanding was that she will bring in to the marriage cash. Sila, for each sela that she brings in, a sela is 4 dinar, as we mentioned earlier. If she agrees to bring in a sela, Nasa Shisha Dinrim. He'll write into the Ksuba 6 dinar. So here you have, in effect, a second example of cash being brought into the marriage. Again, the Gemara will have to deal with the seeming redundancy, as this appears to be a repeat of the beginning of the Mishnah on Omid Aleph. Hechosen mekabelov asora dinrim lekupa lechol mona umona. For every mona we mentioned before is 100 dinar. For every 100 dinar that she brings into the marriage, the husband agrees to supply 10 dinar. Again, 10 dinar per 100 dinar that she brings into the marriage, lekupa. What is the kupa? So Rashi says that it's for all types of fragrances and cosmetics that women use. The Rashi says this number is a result of the Rabbanan figure that a woman who brings in a mona, she's deserving of cosmetics and fragrances to the value of 10 dinar, again, per mona. Exactly what frequency is involved here, how often does he have to supply these things, this is something the Gemara will raise as a question and not really provide a final answer. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer Hakol Keminig HaMedina. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says that it's all dependent, this issue of how much he is to contribute toward her cosmetics supply is dependent on the Minig HaMedina, the custom of that, of each place. The Gemara asks the question that we alluded to earlier, Hainu Posek Kenegdom Chamisha Asar Mona. On Omid Aleph, it was stated that if a 1,000 mona is brought in, the amount that was stated there was Elef Dinar, that's a 1,000 dinar is brought into the marriage, so he is going to write into the Ksuba as if he received 1,500. So is that not the same as what's taught in this Mishnah, where if one dinar is brought in, he's going to write in 1.5 dinar. If one sela is brought in, he's going to write in 1.5 sela, which is the same as saying shisha dinrim. The Gemara answers, and you'll notice we have a long answer. Tana iska rabo v'tana iska zuta. The word iska is a reference to cash. The Mishnah teaches a large cash amount, and the Mishnah teaches a small cash amount. And that in both cases, the same procedure, that you're going to write in to the ksuba a third more. And I need to have both examples. The itana iska rabo, had we been taught the principle with regard to a large amount of cash brought into the marriage, the nafish revacha, it enables a person to make a large profit. Avul iska zuta, the zuta revacha, a small amount of cash that will only enable a person to profit a small amount. Amol lo, maybe this procedure or this practice of writing a third more doesn't apply. Tzricha, therefore we have to tell you the case of the iska zuta as well. The yashun iska zuta, had we told you about writing in a third more with regard to a small amount brought into the marriage, the zutar ziyuna, the expenses that the husband will have to lay out are limited. When we speak about cash and investing, in order to realize profit, people spend money on advertising and other expenditures before one realizes the profits. So that when it comes to a small amount of money that's brought in, so the entire investment is going to be a rather limited, small matter, where his expenses aren't very great. Aval iska rabo dinofish ziyuna. When it comes to a large amount of cash brought in, which is going to necessitate the husband in making large expenditures before realizing the profits, amalo, maybe there he's not expected to write in a third more. Tzricha. Therefore, we have to tell you that in the case of iska rabo as well, he writes in a third more. Hechosin mekabelov asora dinor lekupa. My kupa, what is meant by kupa? Omar Ravashi, kupa shel besomim. It's a kupa literally is a box. We can refer to it as her supply of besomim. Now the word besomim can mean, superficially, it can mean fragrances, perfumes. However, we're going to come back to this word in a moment. We continue in the Gemara. The Omar Ravashi lo nemru dvarim halalu elo biyushalayim. This practice that the Mishnah mentions is stated only in Jerusalem. Rashi says hoyunagas liskashi b'samim. It was the way of women to adorn themselves with perfumes. There's a Tosfos on this topic that's very elucidating. Tosfos lo nemru dvarim halalu elo biyushalayim. Looking at the Tosfos just across from here a bit up, he says v'hadamrinu perek tarf b'kalfi in Maseches Yuma. It says shelo hoysa kala tzrichel izbasim biyushalayim in Jerusalem, the seat of the Beis Hamikdash. Brides didn't have to perfume themselves mitnei reach haktores. There was such an intense fragrance that was emitted by the incense offering that there was no need for perfumes. So Tosfos explains vaday l'reach lo hayu tzrichus l'zbasim. For aromatic purposes, there was no need for her to adorn herself. Aval tzrichus hayu l'kupa shel besamim. There nevertheless was the necessity of a cosmetics supply. And here you notice the word besamim, we're not going to translate it anymore as perfumes, but rather le'adein habosar, ulehashir ha'sear, ulefashet ha'kemotim. Other cosmetic functions are to tenderize the flesh, or to le'adein. Has to do with, it could be an issue of a complexion alteration as a result of the use of different cosmetics. A lahashir seyar is a depilatory, to remove hairs, unwanted hairs. And lefashet ha'kmotim, to smooth out the wrinkles. You can see that some things just never change. We continue in the Gemara. A marking appears. The Mivneh heading on the side indicates, the structural note indicates that this double underline is a Sidra Shel She'elos, a series of questions, Be'inyan HaTashlum Be'ad HaKupa, regarding this payment that the husband is to make toward the cosmetics supply. Boy Ravashi. And we've featured this, by the way, as a long question. They are, all of this section of Gemara is just a series of questions that end up without any real answer. Boy Ravashi, b'mona anishom o b'mona hamiskabel. It was said that for each 100, he is to provide 10 dinar for the cosmetics. When we say the 100, is it for each 100 that they state in their evaluation? Or is it the 100 per 100 that he writes in, which is going to be a fifth less? Im tim tzalomar mona hamiskabel, and if you say it's the amount that he really writes in. Yom Rishon or Kol Yom V'Yom? Is it an amount that he pays for the first day of their wedding, for their first day of marriage, or every day? Im Timtzilam or Kol Yom V'Yom? And if you say he has to pay this every day, Shabbos Rishon or Kol Shabbos V'Shabbos, is it for their first week or for every week? Im Timtzilam or Kol Shabbos V'Shabbos, and you say he has to pay this every week, Chodesh Rishon or Kol Chodesh V'Chodesh, is it just their first month of marriage or every month? Im Tim Salam or Kol Chodesh V'Chodesh, and if you say every month, Shana Rishona or Kol Shana V'Shana, is it just for their first year or for the rest of their lives? Teku, and this remains unresolved. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Maisa Bebita Shenagdimon Ben Gurion. In a case, a story happened with the daughter of Nachdimo Ben Gurion. This, by the way, needs to be contrasted with the story we had in our previous year on Daf Samachayom and Aleph of the daughter-in-law of Nachdimo Ben Gurion. Here we're dealing with his daughter, and the daughter's husband died, and she is going to draw support from the husband's estate. Sheposku lo chachomim arba meis zehuvim lekupa shel besamim lebo bayom. The chachomim decided that she deserves 400 pieces of gold for her cosmetic supply for one day. Omro lohem, she said to the chachomim, kach tifseku levnoi sechem, you should be zoiche to be able to supply your daughters with an amount like that. Vionu achreo amen, and they responded with an affirmation. The pshat that we gave with regard to the daughter of Nachdimon Ben Gurion was based on Rashi's explanation, where Rashi said Shemei Spailo Basel Beis Lifsok Lot Sochem Minuchosav. There's a different approach, and with this different approach and the approach given by Tosfos, we'll be able to appreciate their response a little better. Tosfos at the bottom says V'yanu Achrei Omein L'malo on Daf Samachay with the daughter-in-law story Lo Anu Achrei. And we featured this in our shir. They didn't answer Omein. Shalohoya bai lochai, her husband was not alive. Avol kan shohoya chai. In this case, we're talking about an amount that they determined that the husband has to give her. He is still alive. Onu achra Omein. Ubai lo itil al chachomim yifsiku la. The case, according to Tosfos, is that the husband turned to the chachomim. Listen, you calculate how much I have to provide for her. So with the Tosfos approach, we understand why the Chachamim were motivated to answer Omein to the Bracha, because it was a happy circumstance that the husband was still alive, as opposed to the story on Daf Samachay. They didn't want to answer Omein to what she was saying, because she was in effect describing a situation of her husband having died. As we go on, you notice we now have a second Maisa involving the daughter of Nachdimon Ben Gurion. On the side, we have a topic heading, Maisim Bito Shenachdimon Ben Gurion Bizman HaChurban. This is a story that takes place at the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Tonu Rabbonon, Maisa B'Rabbonon Yochan Ben Zakkai. It was a story involving Rabbi Yochanan Shehoya Rochev Ala Chamor for Yotzim Yisholayim, was riding on a donkey, leaving Jerusalem. V'yu Tamidov Mahalchen Achrov, and his students were following him. Ro Rivo Achas, Shoiso Malaketes Sa'irim Mibain Glole Behemton Shel Aravim. And he saw a girl, Rivo is a young girl, who was collecting barley grains from the dung of Arab animals. Kevon Shirasa Oisoi, when she saw him, Nis'atfo b'sayra, she wrapped herself in her hair, v'omda l'fonav, and she stood in front of him. Omro loy. So the girl says to Rabbi Yochanan, Rebbe Parnaseni, give me support. Give me food. Omar lo, bt, mi'at. Who are you? Omro lo, bas, nachdimon ben gurion ani. I'm the daughter of nachdimon. Nachdimon, as I'm sure you surmised, was a man of great wealth. And we pointed that out in our previous year as well. Omar law BT, Mamon shel base avich hechon holach. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asks her, the wealth of your father, where did it go? Omra lo, Rebbe. So she says to Rabbi Yochanan, Lo kidein maslin maslo b'Yerushalayim. Is there not the following analogy that is given in Jerusalem? Melach mamon choser. Melach literally is salt. Salt is a preservative. If someone wants to preserve his money, wants to cause his wealth to last, the way to do that is choser. Choser means to diminish. That means one is to subtract from his wealth for the purposes of tztoka, to constantly be involved with giving charity. We'll call it the subtraction, the diminishing of funds is the way to preserve the funds. And I would add on my own, not only to preserve the funds, but to cause an increase in the funds, in the merit of one's giving charity. Aser b'shvil shetis asher. Give meiser in order to become wealthy. Give a tenth. Tithe your money. Give money tithes for charitable purposes. That's the way, not only to preserve, but to increase. The Amri law, another version, instead of saying choser, that rather melach momon is chesed, doing acts of loving kindness. Rashi adds that based on the continuation of the Gemara later, Gemara will ask on the second line from the bottom, what do you mean? Nachdim ben Gurion didn't practice chesed. He didn't practice tzedakah. He certainly did. So the Gemara will eventually answer that he didn't do as much as he was capable of doing. The Gemara goes on. Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai asks her, Vishel beis chomich hechon hu, and the wealth of your father-in-law, where did that go? Omra lo, she answered, Bozeh v'ibed ezeh. Literally, this one came and caused this one's loss. Rashi says, Lefish nis'arev bo. Nis'arev would be a guarantor. So that if Nachdimon ben Gurion lost money, her father-in-law served as his mechutin's guarantor, so whatever losses Nachdimon experienced in his financial losses, he wasn't able to meet his debts, so those debts had to be paid up through the father-in-law, so that caused him to lose. Omro lo, she says to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabbi, zechorato keshechosamto al ksubosi, do you remember when you signed on my ksuba? Omar lohen letamidov. He then turns to the talmidim that were with him. Zechorani keshechosamti al ksubosi shelzu. I remember signing on her ksuba document. Voisikuri ba elef alofim dinore zav mi base aviha chutz mishel chamiha. The amounts were vast. Elef alofim means thousands upon thousands of gold dinar coins she brought into the marriage from her father's house, besides the amount that was coming in from her husband's side. Basically, Shechamia literally is from her father-in-law, meaning from her husband's side. Bocha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, v'omar, Yochanan ben Zakkai cried, and he said, Ashrechem Yisrael, fortunate are you, the Jewish people. Bizman she'oisin ritzoy nishol mokoyim, when the Jewish people follow the will of the Almighty, ein ko umo v'loshem she'letis bohem, no people nor nationality has any rule over them. Ubizman she'ein oisin ritzoy nishol mokoyim, and when the Jewish people do not fulfill the will of the Almighty, mosrun Biyadu Moshvela, the Almighty hands them over to a lowly nation. Not only to a lowly nation, Ela Biyad Behemton Shel Umoshvela, but to the animals of the lowly nation. And we saw this above when reference was made to her, to this girl, the daughter of Nahum Gurin, seeking her meager sustenance from the dung of those animals. Rashi adds the before we described her taking the barley grains from the dung of the Arabs, Aravayim, the Arabians or the Arabs, animal dung. Rashi at the bottom says Aravim Kori Umo Shvela, they're called a lowly nation. Shishechne Oyulim Heim Bamidbar, they're mere tent, desert tent dwellers. They don't have any established cities, and as a result of their temporal existence, they're referred to as an Umo Shvela, the term lowly nation in that sense. The Gemara continues with the question that we mentioned earlier. V'nakdimon ben Gurion lo ovad stoka. She said above that her father didn't practice the giving of charity. Is that so? V'hot tanya. Was it not taught omru olav v'nakdimon ben Gurion? It was said regarding him, k'sheyotzim mibeiso lebeis hamedrash, when he left his house to go study Torah in the beis medrash, klimelas. Hoyu, we continue at the top of Daf Samach Zayin, Matzien Tachtov. They would place under him, meaning under, as he was walking along, he was never walking on the pavement itself, on the ground itself, but they would place klimilas is fabric, soft fabrics under his feet. And as he passed by, the poor would gather up these fabrics, and these fabrics had value to them, and in that way, the aniyim were able to support themselves. So you see that Nakdimon did practice charity. So what was meant before, that the daughter would say he didn't practice tzedakah? Iboy Yisema, one approach is the chodahu di avad. A very, very interesting answer, in that it's all a matter of intent. According to this answer, it's saying, the Gemara is saying that he didn't have any intent for charitable purposes. He did it for his own honor. It was a sign of he would attract a great amount of public respect by people being in awe of his wealth, that he was able to do such a thing. So since there was no charitable intent, it's considered, by according to this answer at least, as if it wasn't an act of tzedakah. V'boya seima, another approach is, he may very well have had intent for tzedakah purposes in this practice, but k'deboy le'lemevad lo avad, but as much as he could, he didn't. He didn't take upon himself the charitable, or the burden of charity that he would have been, or he was able to, could have maintained. Kida Amri, and she, as people say, Lafun Gamlo Shikhana, according to the size of the camel, is the load you can place upon him. So according to your wealth, if you're a man of great wealth, you should be giving a vast amount of charity. From time to time we hear of famous personalities, famous wealthy individuals giving large charitable contributions, but one has to think about, it's very nice he's giving a large charitable contribution, but is that in proportion to the amount he could really be giving? In other words, we shouldn't be impressed with, we'll say, just objective numbers, objective amounts that are given, but one has to look at the amount that's given relative to the wealth of the individual giving it. Tanya, Omar Rav Elazar ben Tzadok, Erev Nechama, this expression is an expression of vowing, of swearing. Erev ben Nechama, im lo re'isiha shel oysel melaketes seorin mi beis talfei susim ba'ako. That's basically, I saw her collecting barley grains from between the hooves of horses in Akko. Akko, a name of a community in Israel. Karasi Aleo Mikrozeh, and Reb Elazar says, and when, upon seeing that, I referred to her the following pasuk. Im lo yisaydi loch hayofa banoshim, tzii loch bikvi atzon ri es gedio sayach. Al tikri gedio sayach, elo gavio sayach. Rashi, on the second line from the top, im lo seidi, im lo titni lev, kenes Yisrael lishmor satura, if you, the Jewish people, don't pay attention to keeping the Torah, to what we would say being an observant Jew, observing, following, keeping the laws of the Torah, and not merely being a what they call a good Jew at heart, or I have good Jewish intentions, but it means fulfillment of the Torah, of the Torah's precepts. If the Jewish people are not involved with that, your end is going to be this, that you're going to be set out to graze, and the literal reading of the pasuk, you'll follow the steps of your sheep and graze your goats. But the Gemara added, Al tikri gediosach el gaviosach, you'll be grazing your own bodies. And the idea is that in order to preserve your own bodies, you're going to have to go out, like where Belozer Ben Sodek had described, you have to go out into the fields following animals to collect grains from between their feet. Of course, our hope in learning Torah and providing these shiurim, the Gemara Markings Project, is designed to inspire people. And that's our hope and prayer, that people will gain more from their Torah learning, and Torah learning leads to Torah practice, and Torah learning in and of itself is the single greatest mitzvah that we have to perform. And our hope and prayer is that we should all merit experiencing Torah success and in its learning, and also in the fulfillment of its mitzvos. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.